Bonk.
Hey, Dan.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well, as we're quarantined here in the zone, in the podcast zone.
Yeah, what better place to be quarantined than in a tiny place where there's all the materials for podcasting, which is what we do.
Yeah.
It just happens to be that way.
I'm glad we finally had an excuse to stay indoors and watch streaming stuff on a couch.
Yeah. I was thinking, my lifestyle is already so quarantine ready.
Yeah.
Don't have to social distance because I've already been social distancing myself for years.
It's very much voluntary, though.
Yeah. So I found this transition to be quite easy.
Yeah. We're at home, safe and sound with the pup. Which, by the way, as of, I guess I'll go ahead and say this here. All the pictures will do this way more justice after this episode comes out. But we got another addition coming to, I don't want to, when I say it like that, it sounds like it's a baby. It's a dog.
We're not having a baby.
No.
We're getting another little puppy.
Yes.
To keep Brazer company.
A King Charles Cavalier.
We're very excited about it.
Yes. We have some names we've kind of thrown around, but we're going to wait to kind of see its personality before we solidify one. Very excited.
Very excited. Exciting times. There's so many different things to look forward to. Obviously, there's so many joys that go with having a little tiny puppy because they're so cute.
Yes.
And they could be a pain in the ass, but they're so adorable. And then just seeing his personality reveal itself to us over time and stuff, just like Razor's did. And also having a Razor, like, have someone to hang out with. And so he'll have a dog friend to...
Yeah.
Do dog things with.
We'll have to get another little bed for the Pizone here.
Yes.
For this dog to hopefully be as cool as little Razor has been while we have podcasted. So yeah, that's where we are at, is we are extremely excited about the new little 8-week-old puppy that will be joining us very soon.
Yeah, and it's kind of perfect timing with the coronavirus stuff going on and people being quarantined to have a puppy. I mean, because you want to be home with the puppy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Spend a lot of time with it, teach it some things, teach it what not to do. But most importantly, to spend a lot of time with the little guy that's going to be coming in soon. As of the day this podcast comes up, we will probably be driving to pick him up.
Yeah.
So very exciting.
Indeed.
Other things going on before we go into the meat of this. We liked RoboCop a lot. Last week, it was real good. So we did watch Starship Troopers.
Yes.
Yeah, we watched that last night.
The other Paul Verhoeven film.
Yes. The other a lot of similar stuff going on there. Obviously, we're not doing a full episode on it,
but similar themes.
Yeah, and also like the thing he does with the like kind of fake commercials that are super good.
Mm-hmm.
Like here, it's all like very much like wartime propaganda, army stuff. I thought that stuff was great.
Yeah, I mean it's. You could really take that movie at face value, and I think appreciated it just in terms of it being like a fun kind of adventure movie, watching this kid go from just like high school student to being one of like this super soldier kind of guy. But also in RoboCop fashion, there's a whole other layer to it where it's just like at this point, the military is just all consuming. Humanity's at this never ending war with these bugs. And, at one point the commander says violence is the supreme authority. And it's like, why not just, you're clearly never going to win this battle against this unstoppable species of bugs, the arachnids.
Yeah.
So why not just, I don't know, talk to them? Like, they capture the brain bug and they said it was scared. Like, there are a lot of moments in it that definitely try to, you know, poke fun at that, you know. Military and everything like that. But it was funny. It had a lot of really funny moments and touching moments. And it was just a fun, it was a lot more epic than I thought it would be. I thought it was just going to be kind of like a singular story, but it kind of traced these kids from high school to coming into their own in the military and everything.
Yeah, it's almost like two different stories about them going through like military school and everything and training and then like the actual war stuff in the back half. But we mentioned several times while we were watching it, like for a movie that came out in 1997, the CG is incredible in that movie.
Yeah, I was worried because I knew there was CG in it, like from the stills I had seen.
Yeah.
And I thought that it would be distracting, but it wasn't distracting at all. In fact, there was occasionally there would be a contrast there where it wouldn't look as good, but I think by and large it looked awesome.
I mean, and there are parts where like huge like armies of these swarming bugs just like going over hills and stuff that look incredible. Like it's aged so much better than like the prequel trilogy of the Star Wars movies, right. And that had like ILM, you know, Lucas stuff on it, and a lot of that looks just so fake, right. You know, whereas this looked awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they also did a lot of really cool stuff with practical effects. Like whenever they zoomed in on the bug or the bugs or whatever, there's usually practical effects involved and they always looked really good. One of my favorite parts of the movie was when Rico gets kind of put on administrative leave after one of his... It was when the one person in his squad got killed, right?
Right, yeah, the helmet thing.
And, you know, just to put in perspective, like administrative leave, you know, you think you're just pushing pencils for a few weeks while you're still getting paid. But in this future... he literally gets 10 lashes. He's tied up and gets 10 lashes
in the public
square. In front of everyone. Yeah, in the public square. And then he's like, oh, I've had enough of this. I can't do this. But and then the other time where he actually dies.
Yes.
And then gets brought back to life to continue fighting.
Yeah. You mentioned Verhoeven seems to be fond of that plot
device. Yeah, repurposing people so they could keep fighting. And it was just so they didn't like the kids were so unfazed by it. Like they were poking at him while he was like being reconstructed in that tank, like poking at the tank like you would a fish tank at a Chinese restaurant or whatever. Like just so unfazed by it.
Yeah, just goofing around.
Yeah, it was great. Great world building I think definitely one of his strong suits is building these versions of the future that are like believable and really relatable because it doesn't look so crazy futuristic from what we're used to. So it makes, you know, the changes and the messages he's trying to send so much more impactful because we can relate to what's going on to an extent.
Yeah, he's incredibly good at that. And I'm actually half bummed that, like, looking through his filmography, there weren't that many of these types of, like, kind of future. Like, he made Total Recall, obviously, in this and RoboCop. But there's not, like, a whole suite of these Verhoeven future movies because it definitely hits on some stuff that I like a lot,
yeah.
And it seems to work with you, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, real quick, by the way, we posted the RoboCop episode, and somebody sent us this deleted scene, this fake scene from RoboCop of him gruesomely shooting off the penises.
So many penises get blown apart.
Yeah, actual penises and then, like, disturbingly realistic special effects, and it's, like, 4 minutes of some of the grossest stuff, but it hit both of us.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's because it's really well done, like,
yeah.
Really high quality, and the fact that so much was invested in this scene that's essentially just people getting their dicks blown off.
Yes, that's the entire thing. So, yeah, good stuff there. But we had another thing. If you saw the title of this episode, it's not about Paul Verhoeven or dicks getting shot off. It's about those Draculas.
Mm.
How many episodes of this podcast have we done that have something to do with Dracula? We did Bram Stoker. This is our third Castlevania one. We started watching that Netflix Dracula and we weren't hot on that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was like, I don't want to watch this for a whole season.
It was like campy. I think it was like three episodes that were all like an hour and a half long.
We watched, I feel like, 20 minutes of the first episode. The dialogue was, I just remember the dialogue being terrible.
Yeah. Every single thing Dracula said was like a double entendre. Like, oh, I don't drink wine.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, this is lame. So, yeah, I feel like we did more vampire stuff, didn't we? Or is it
just
those?
Well, there was obviously
Blood Rain.
Bram Stoker's Blood Rain.
Yeah.
This first season of Castlevania, second season of Castlevania. We'd have to go back in the catalog and look at everything, but...
Yeah, I never considered myself a big, like, fan of, like, Dracula vampire type stuff, but, like, as I watch more of it and read Dracula and everything, it's like, actually, this is super cool.
I don't find myself particularly interested in Dracula... But it just happens to be that the stories told about him and around him are so interesting. I don't find him to be especially compelling in all the different iterations of him. Like, that alone doesn't intrigue me. It's just that they happen to be so well done all the time.
In the settings and the weapons and all this stuff, the idea of, like, vampire hunters and monsters surrounding all this. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff surrounding, like, vampire fiction, it seems.
I just like that, like, it's like this fancy castle... like goth castle stuff, but also demons coming from hell kind mm-hmm. of stuff.
And like weird, some like cosmic horror stuff, which we'll get to this season with the Infinite
Corridor.
Oh yeah,
a lot of cosmic stuff going on.
Yeah, and like weird magic moving castles and like mm-hmm. giant gears and stuff. Like I think I told you after we watched the season, like I love, like Castlevania wound up being a great source material for a show mm-hmm. because all the like aesthetics and everything are super cool. You know, the Belmont, this family of vampire hunters and Dracula mm-hmm. and magic, like a million awesome monsters throughout all the games. And this big castle to explore, like all these things are really cool in the games, mm-hmm. but the games don't have like long cutscenes or a bunch of story.
Right.
So it's just kind of like, hey, here's the characters and settings right. and music, which is all awesome. We got yeah. a great tone going on here. But then when you make a show, it's just like, well, what do we want to do with all this cool stuff?
They don't feel shackled to any kind of plot stuff from the video games. And I think that's where a lot of video game adaptations fail, because they feel like they have to adhere to some aspect of the video gaminess of whatever video game their source material is.
The Doom movie had a first-person shooter sequence
exactly.
in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like the tournament from Tekken, you know, all the stuff, like... Blood Rain was just completely stupid.
Yes. It's like if they would have shoehorned in a scene in Castlevania where like Trevor is jumping across a bunch of like rotating mm-hmm. gears, because like, well, every Castlevania has that clock tower segment. It's like yeah. they don't do that. They just do cool shit with the characters and tone.
Yeah, they take the stuff they want to take from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. They set up the fourth season really well as well. We'll get to it, but I think you mentioned earlier how, not on the podcast, but you said how, like, it seems like they could just keep going with the show. It doesn't seem like they're limited by anything. They could go way beyond video games at this point, and yeah.
Yeah, every season I feel like has had a totally different feel to it, where the first one was very short and just kind of, like, laid the groundwork.
Right.
Like, here's Dracula and his backstory with mm-hmm. Lisa and everything. The second one was like, hey, we're going to try to kill Dracula and also set up this Carmilla army here. And then this third season, it's like... It starts and you think it's going to be one thing. Like early on in season 3, they established that like Carmilla and like her cool vampire sisters, mm-hmm. they've all basically like they won the war basically. Like they have this huge army and everything, and they just want to create this feeding like basically all the like land of Wallachia, or mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's all just ravaged by war and everything, and they just want to set up like a perimeter. And you know, people are going to keep reproducing and stuff like that, and it'll be this infinite like feeding pen basically.
Right.
And so that's in, like, episode 1 and 2, and mm-hmm. I assumed that was the season, was like, oh, we're going to try to enslave humanity in this whole stretch of the country.
Yeah. No, not at all. They don't really show it. It's a lot of preparations, and I think that's what we're going to see a lot of next season is probably the actual war, because Carmilla herself, I mean, it's pretty much just her, you know, talking out her plans in a war room with her sisters. That being said, it's despite Dracula being... essentially absent from the season, save for the last 2 episodes, I feel like. But even then, he didn't have any speaking roles. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't missed at all for me. I feel like the whole season was kind of recovering from the crazy shit that went down the previous season. And, you know, Carmilla is making moves to take advantage of how vulnerable the area is now after betraying Dracula. Isaac is being such a devotee to mm-hmm. Dracula, is just after Hector, who betrayed him.
Right.
And he's amassing his demon army and meeting a lot of really cool characters on the way. Like Hector, the thing about this show that I really like, and I think Hector's storyline encapsulates it really well, is that you're not really rooting for humanity a lot of the time, because it seems like whenever like humanity gets an inch, they take a mile. It's mm-hmm. like every time Isaac like meets someone that's like kind of opening his eyes and making him feel a little bit better about humanity. And keep in mind, he's human too, but he's just been so wronged by people over the years that he's just Dracula's way is the only way for him. It's just that he meets some asshole, some random people that want to kill him because he has these demons or something or other. So he's just totally soured on humans. And as a human viewer. And maybe this is because the main villains are humanoids, you know what I mean? The vampires look just like humans in the
right.
show. It's easier to, you know, not necessarily root for them, but kind of empathize with them a little bit, especially the Dracula stuff. And granted, they didn't touch on that this season. But, I mean, at the end of the day, these vampires just need food to sustain themselves, right?
Yeah, and they're going about it in some very evil ways and stuff. But, like, yeah, as for the humans, there are a lot of just really shitty humans. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a big reveal at the end of the season that we'll get to, that, like, yeah, the humans are... just as evil, if not more so, in some circumstances.
Right.
You know, we've got all these weird monks, which we'll talk about. But, like, I feel like the only two that you can really kind of root for without any question is, like Trevor and Sypha
right.
seem to just basically be
yeah.
good people. You
right.
know, like, Saint Germain was cool. He's a new
oh,
character.
Oh, yeah. He was kind of mysterious, and I was wondering about his motivations in the beginning, but... It's just because he seems there's so much mystery surrounding him. He seems to be like an otherworldly kind of guy who's just seen everything there is to see in the world.
Very scholarly.
To the point where he's like completely unfazed by this portal to hell opening up in front of him.
Yeah.
I really liked when when he realized what was going on with the portal and that, you know, Dracula was in hell and stuff. And like, he was like, all this for Vlad Tepes or whatever.
Yeah, this asshole.
Yeah.
This guy sucks.
And you think about like in the context of the world that this takes place in, Dracula is probably a powerful figure in Romania or wherever they are, Hungary. I don't know where this show takes place. But Transylvania.
Yeah.
But he's not, it's not like he's some kind of creator or has some dominion over the world as a whole. I mean, it's pretty localized. So the fact that they would destroy an entire village, well, obviously I'm jumping ahead, but just to bring back this guy, I thought that was a funny reaction. And I think it kind of establishes, too, how he's been through so much in his life to just be able to look at something like that and make a joke about, like, this is all just for this guy?
Yeah, yeah. This guy sucks. I went to college with him. He was a jerk. Yeah. So, yeah, speaking of Saint Germain, like, basically his story arc is pretty simple in that he lost a lover to this infinite corridor, mm-hmm. is what it was called. And she basically, like, fell into a portal, basically, and he's just been trying to figure out how to get back to her. And he has this, like, little, like, divining stone or whatever.
Right.
And he thinks that he's pretty sure, based on how the stone's reacting, that this portal is underneath this church, this priory in Lindenfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a lot of the early parts of the season are just kind of setting up, like, okay, something is up with this church and this town.
Right.
Like, most of the events of this season, despite starting out with Carmilla and her sisters mm-hmm. and their castle, wherever, Lindenfeld is where all the action happens.
Yeah,
here.
The Carmilla stuff is kind of looming in the background. The Carmilla and Isaac story kind of loosely intertwined because Isaac is after Hector and Carmilla
right.
is keeping Hector prisoner. Do you want to go into the Lindenfeld stuff, or since that's the bulk of the story, do you want to explore the other ones first?
Yeah, let's do some other stuff here. I thought there was a really great sequence where Saint Germain was talking about the Infinite Corridor, and I think he had a dream that he was in the corridor, and like he's just going through space and time, mm-hmm. and he's seeing like spaceships in the woods, and then what was the other one? There's like a mech in the desert. Like
mm-hmm.
that was just such a cool, surreal. Like you also see this like upside down area with all these like gears and stuff. And I wonder if that was kind of a subtle nod to the upside down castle in Symphony of the
mm-hmm.
Night, which is a huge part of it. I just thought that was really awesome. Like the music and the visuals, like the colors of all these like kind of portal
yeah.
sequences and stuff were so awesome, I thought.
Yeah, you could tell this show doesn't have probably as big a budget as it deserves, as I think they'd be able to do amazing things
mm-hmm.
with it. But there are moments where the animation is really incredible.
Yeah.
I think that during the sequence with the Legion of Bodies,
yes.
Well, that's an Isaac. Do you want to get into that? Because it's Isaac.
Let's do Isaac's thing.
Okay, so Isaac, I just wanted to mention how, like, one of the coolest characters in the season who doesn't get a lot of screen time, but it's the captain of a ship.
What was his thing? Was the ship that was taken, Isaac?
Yeah, exactly. The ship's captain that Isaac is obviously, like, weary of because he, as I said earlier, he approaches any human with caution.
Yeah, yeah.
But the captain is just, like, this cool guy. He's just, like, wants to talk to Isaac. Like, after Isaac reveals that he, like, sat in Dracula's court and like was, you know, the forge master for Dracula and just this like kind of significant person, the significant part of this very evil thing that has kind of destroyed the area.
Yeah.
And the captain is like wholly unfazed by it and it's just like, let's just shoot the shit about it, you know what I mean?
The salty old like sea captain type.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, yeah. And also all of the Isaac scenes are so cool because like I think it was at the end of last season when he started kind of like amassing the demon army. And the
mm-hmm.
way they show like when he does the forging or whatever is so cool when like especially when they pull back and you just see the red like columns of light just like, zoom,
mm-hmm.
zoom. Like I love that.
It's really cool.
And then he just goes from town to town and just has these monsters. It's like ever-growing monster army
uh-huh.
just like performing straight-up Mortal Kombat fatalities, like just tearing faces off
uh-huh.
and like limb from limb. But what does he say? Like, don't eat them, like only killing blows because he wants to turn them all into
right.
you know, workable demons.
Right.
And then talking to the demons about like who they were and like what do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was such a cool way to make them not just faceless, like, ah, I'm going to eat you. Yeah. You know, like, there was the weird, like, bug guy with the eyes that he talks about his past. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what his deal was, but I remember that being really interesting, like, around the fire in the desert.
Yeah, it's always interesting when they kind of put a focus on just a more insignificant player. But I was thinking, too, this is one of those shows where you would not want to be anyone that doesn't have a name in the show.
Oh, no.
There is so much death in this show.
Yes.
An insane amount of whether you're being turned into a demon or you're literally falling from the sky or pillars of fire are just engulfing you. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many ways to die.
It's very, what's the famous one with Star Trek? Like, the red shirts. Like, just the random guys in red shirts are always the ones that die. It's like, right. Yeah, if you're not a named character here, you're getting your head ripped off by a bug creature thing.
Right. So, Isaac's story kind of culminates when he gets to this, when he's on, like I said, he's on the journey to Hector and amassing his huge army along the way, because he wants to get revenge. And he goes to, from what I understand, and this story, it was a little confusing to me, I guess because I just assumed that the evil guy in question here was someone of significance.
The wizard guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes to this village where he meets this woman who says, like, oh, this village has been overtaken by this magician, using rock and roll to turn the people into zombies. And she was immune because she has magic powers. So Isaac goes and tries to find this magician and kills him. And we see some of the coolest shit in the show with this going on. Like, the magician has, like, taken control of the city that they're in, and it seems like other cities as well, because there's so many people. And in a nod to the Legion boss that you were describing earlier, all these bodies are just forming this giant sphere. It's so fucking awesome.
And they're floating up into it slowly, almost like the bodies in Control. They were just kind of floating. They're just like these zombie bodies with this, like, spectral crown of thorns.
Yes.
And yeah, I mentioned while you were watching it, that Legion, that boss. That boss fight was actually probably the thing that turned me into such a big Castlevania fan, because I'd kind of dabbled with the NES games and Super Nintendo games at friends' houses back in the day, but I wasn't like a hardcore Castlevania guy until I was working at Funko Land in like 2000 or 2001, which was like 5 years after Symphony of the Night came out, and I never played it. And I just, my friend was playing, and he's like, yeah, this is one of the best games of all time. And I started watching him, and he got to that Legion boss, which is just this ball of writhing bodies. And I was like, this looks fucking cool. Like, the art was so, like, the sprite graphics of Castlevania. And so I took it home. I rented it from Funko Land. And, rented. I know it's not a rental store, but I worked there, so you could rent games, so that's accurate. And I just fell in love with Symphony. I beat it, you know, so many times over, doing the full 210 whatever percent, and then just went on to all the Metroidvania specifically games, the DS, the GBA ones. I love those.
So this boss has a special place in your heart.
Yeah,
perhaps so without seeing that, you wouldn't have gotten into the series.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I probably would have, like, respected it, but, like, didn't really play a lot of them. So yeah, seeing Legion form, I was like, oh man, that's so cool. Because again, this show does the coolest nods to the game, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. So like when it does do something, like when it starts playing Bloody Tears and the like climactic stuff in last season, it's like, oh, right. Awesome. Like you've got this massive well of music and characters and stuff to pull from, and they're doing it in the smartest, coolest way.
Yeah. It's awesome. And the bodies, they're mainly in the sphere, but they also, it's amazing how it's animated. It looks so cool. They flow like water. There's so many of them when they're overtaking this castle as Isaac is ascending it to get to the magician. And once he finally reaches the magician, who's this like decrepit guy.
Cervantes looking dude.
Yeah, it looks very much like Cervantes. And I also like, I don't know if this is universal in the show, but they seem to suggest that whenever someone is really near a strong source of power, like we saw it with Saint Germain when he first saw the corridor, he immediately got like a limp and stuff. When people are around great sources of power, it seems to just wither their bodies down.
Huh.
I almost wonder if that's why he was in such a decrepit state, or if he was just an old man. I don't know.
Right. Kind of like the mystery too of like who is this dude?
Yeah.
At first I thought I like missed something.
So
I was
did
like, I. Oh, did I not pay attention to something? But now that I know it's just like this mysterious old wizard on top of a tower that manages this ball of bodies, like that's a cool thing.
Yeah, it makes me like it even more, honestly. So Isaac is able to kill him before the magician takes control of him.
Yeah. Because he makes the crown and then he like puts the knife in and like breaks it
before
it forms.
Yeah, that was really cool. I almost wonder when I first saw it if they were going to do it that way, like have Isaac go down that way, like just have him be possessed by this magician.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It's simple, you know, just stabbed him in the tummy and then it was all done. And the bodies that were like sticking to the windows start falling off and you see bodies just literally rain from the sky.
Oh, just thousands and thousands of bodies. It's an incredible visual.
Really cool. Yeah.
And even that idea of like him just walking into a room and us not knowing who this powerful guy is, that almost to me is like evocative of the feeling that happens constantly in those games where it's like you walk in, like there's a safe spot and you're like, this is probably gonna be a boss fight. You walk into a room, the door's shut and you're like, okay, boss fight time.
Right.
And then something just shows up. You're like, what the fuck is this thing? And it's always some big, powerful, crazy looking thing. And you don't really know what it is, but it's like, I guess I gotta fight it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the very act of ascending a tower is pretty video gamey in and of itself.
Remember the end of Ocarina? That's one of my favorite endings. As you're going up the stairs and the organ music is getting louder and louder, and then just Ganon's up there playing the organ. Like, so fucking cool.
Okay, so maybe we should touch on what goes down with Alucard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty simple. In my opinion, this was the weakest of the storylines of the season.
Yeah, I think it hinted at some cool stuff when we first meet them, because these two vampire hunters, Taka and Sumi, show up and basically try to sneak up on him and observe him while he's at a creek, because they just want to learn how to kill this, like, basically a Dracula of Japan,
right?
You know, that, like, terrorized their home. And the flashes of that stuff in Japan, I thought were really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like seeing what this like cool like Japanese Dracula was doing.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, because I feel like you're only used to seeing Dracula type people in these like Transylvanian-esque settings.
You don't really Eastern see them. European.
Yeah, you don't really see them in the like traditional Japanese architecture. I don't know what it is called, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and they've got like samurai swords and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
it's very cool.
It's very Sekiro.
And Cho, the Japanese Dracula lady, she doesn't even have a sword. She literally just uses her hands to like chop people up and very Fist of the North Star-esque, literally stabbing people with her hands, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, that little hint was really, really cool. We saw like one little vignette basically of what this thing was.
And... Well, wasn't she, am I remembering correctly that she was actually part of Dracula's court?
It might have been something like that.
In the previous season.
Oh, maybe that was it.
Because remember, he had like a few like really powerful vampires around him.
You might be right. I forget all the specifics of the last season.
So anyway, they go to Alucard, and Alucard notices them and says like, "Hey, I could train you, teach you maybe even some magic, teach you tactics and everything like that." But Alucard is in exile, essentially. He doesn't have a lot of human contact, and you could tell that's like super wearing on him, and he's extremely lonely. So he really is. Seems to be very excited about the prospect of having people that he can train under them and, you know, form connections with and stuff like that. So the kids know that Sumi and Taka know that in this castle is some kind of mechanism that will teleport the castle, which we saw at the end of the last season. And they want to see it, but Alucard is reluctant to show them, so they're kind of suspicious of him, but he just is honest with them and tells them, like, I don't want to rush because... Frankly, I enjoy having him around.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty much it. Like he just wants to take time to teach all the basics before getting into it, because he's also, for him, what he's getting out of it personally is the human contact and the relationships and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he's also being smart about like one of them wants to fight with a bow and arrow, and he's like, well, there's plenty of times you're going to run out of arrows and stuff, so I'm going to teach you this hand to hand type stuff.
Right.
So like it seems like he's not being a dick throughout.
No,
this,
not at all. Know? Which is why it seemed so. I don't know, out of left field, surprising when they, so at the end of, in the middle of the night, I guess, they go to his bedroom and kind of seduce him and they get it on. And then out of nowhere, they tie him up in this thing that puts him in like this crucifix pose.
Yeah.
And it, like sears into his body. It looks incredibly uncomfortable.
Yes.
And they say pretty much like, oh, you're just like everyone else. You're not really going to teach us, which seems like a big conclusion to jump to. Yeah. I thought in my mind, it would have made more sense to be like, you know, to have these kids were, I keep calling them kids. These people were somehow affected by the actions of Dracula and wanted to take out Alucard because they were suspicious of the fact that he was Dracula's son. You know, I feel like that would have been a stronger reason to do that to him rather than just them being kind of impatient that he wasn't showing him the engine room. You know what I mean?
Just being like, oh, we wanted to learn this stuff sooner and he didn't do it, so we're going to kill you. Like, and it didn't really build to that naturally.
Yeah, it didn't build like to that at all. Most of it was all great. Everything was fine until that moment.
Yeah, it was a pretty abrupt heel turn there.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Totally.
So yeah, I'd agree with you. That's probably one of the weaker like side stories in a season that has like a lot of different side stories, and most of them work pretty well for me. The other one being Lenore and Hector. I always get Hector and Isaac's names.
I just want to say before we move on, I think it was important with Alucard at the very end. The last time we see him is he has their two bodies impaled in front of his castle, which is similar to what his dad did. So I don't know if maybe this was all just a vehicle for him to kind of make a heel turn and start being more like Dracula. Because, you know, like when we learned about Dracula's story, I think I said in our first Castlevania podcast that I kind of feel bad for him. You know what I mean? I'm kind of rooting for him in a way because his story was in some levels kind of so sweet. Like he was so distraught about his wife getting killed for no good reason.
So
it's not like he's a pure evil, but he arrived at being evil after everything he's been through. So I could see Alucard taking a similar path. And I wonder if he will be an adversary to Trevor and Sypha in the next season, or if they're, I hope they build to that slowly and don't do a Game of Thrones-esque jump to making this person evil. It would be nice if they let that simmer for a while, but I hope that's where it's going.
Yeah, that type of stuff makes me feel like the all the like big boss Metal Gears, where it's like, all right, we know he's going to turn evil here, but like every one of these games, like, okay, Snake Eater, he found out that the government betrayed him and the boss's death was, you know, like, basically he was a pawn in this whole thing. Okay, that's where he turns. And then the next one, it's like, okay, he hasn't turned yet. And then by the time, like, Phantom Pain's coming around and he's, like, murdering all of his own men, shooting them in the head that have the, like, contagion thing, it's like, okay, maybe this is the thing that something finally snaps in his brain. So I feel like they're doing, like, they're laying the groundwork for Alucard if they're going to have him be, like, a big bad here.
Totally.
You know? But yeah, so Hector is imprisoned. That is after the events of season two. And he's in there with all the vampire sisters, basically. And his story is all tied to Lenore, basically. He's in a jail cell. It starts out with her being like, hey, I'm the diplomat. I'm here to talk to you. And they're being kind of flirty and stuff. And at one point, she asked for something, asked for like his lead on it. He's like leashed or whatever. And he like reaches through the bars and grabs her and basically tries to like choke her out.
Right.
And she turns into fucking bats, which that's a good move to pull in a fight.
Yeah.
Like I wish I could have that. I've never been in a fight in my life, but I bet if I was like at a bar and somebody swung at me and I turned into bats and appeared behind them, that would scare the shit out of them.
That would be an awesome, I mean, I feel like that could be useful in other situations too, just turning into bats.
Like if you like to get around?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And just, you know, a cool thing to do. I mean, if I could be bats, I feel like I would be bats more than I would be human.
Oh, you would spend more time?
I would love being bats all the time, yeah.
You love comfort so much, though. If you were just like a pile of bats, do you think you would be comfortable?
If I was a pile of bats, I probably wouldn't be as comfortable, but it would probably have its little pleasures.
Yeah?
Yeah,
you'd
I think
be like 50 bats.
I would love that. I would love to be 50 bats. Maybe even 100.
Look, we'd all love to be 50 bats.
is Earth a Patreon? So Lenore, I really like, so I'm a sucker, Dan, as you know, for groups of really cool women who each have their own unique abilities.
Yes.
This is something that I really like. I really like the Beauty and the Beast unit, even though a lot of people didn't like that. I was super into that. So we have Lenore, Morana, Striga, and of course, Carmilla. Carmilla seems to be the kind of the ruler of this group of vampires, if you will. She's the brains, or at least the strategist, kind of, the master strategist.
Right.
Striga is the military, a person who has the mind for the military and that stuff. And Morana is more of like seems to be the planner and the brains. And Lenore is the diplomat. Mm-hmm. So once they said like she was the diplomat, I was obviously, and I feel like this is the most obvious thing in the world, that she was playing Hector from the beginning. I was never...
but was very good at it.
Very good at it. Yeah, very good at it. And they gave that a lot of time, too. Mm-hmm. I partially thought she was going to go down there the first time she saw him and he would be taken by her and, like, immediately, you know, be putty in her hands. But they gave it a lot of time and it feels earned at the end. Pretty much she just slowly seduces him, gives him, you know, he's in squalor when she first meets him, but gives him little kind of luxuries and a bed, fruit, you know, a proper meal, books, stuff like that. And they get close and they hang out a lot. And, you know, he earns her trust and then they get it on at one point. And she puts this ring on him and makes him say this oath, which I guess in his mind, he thought it was just like sexy talk.
Right.
But the reality is he swore an oath to her, and when she put this ring on him, he became her slave.
Yeah, so she has, like, full power over him, and it's this, like, weird Clockwork Orange thing where if he even thinks about, like, attacking her mm-hmm. or harming her, mm-hmm. like, he's, like, caused intense pain. It says something about, like, it'll feel like you're shitting out your heart or something if you... Yeah, so he's screwed.
Yeah, but at the very least, she tells him that he'll have a great life as long as he continues to serve. You know, he'll have free reign of the castle, he'll be able to... enjoy the finer things in life, but he won't have his freedom.
Yeah, yeah, he's comfortable, he'll have books and stuff, but he ultimately just has to, like, do anything she says.
Right.
And then she gives these other rings that are linked to hers to the other girls, and so they all have power over Hector, who also will have power over a whole demon army, so it's a real good setup for another season, for sure.
Totally.
Yeah, I thought all that stuff worked really well.
And I thought that was great.
And it wasn't obvious enough, because, like, you know, even as the viewer, you know, you could understand Hector being kind of like, wait, is she actually being cool, or is she just, like, because everyone's just super suspicious, you know, the viewer, Hector, but then I don't know, I think they handled that well and subtly, you know?
I agree. It was well done.
And then, yeah, I guess the main arc here is Lindenfeld and the Priory. And, like, it basically starts with Trevor and Sypha showing up. There's this judge guy, this big, bald judge.
He seems to almost be, like, the sheriff of the town or the mayor of the town. He keeps everything on track. He oversees it. And in the shadow, like, looming over the town is this priory, and no one's allowed to go in it. And these priors are possessed, like, spewing very pro-Dracula stuff.
Yeah, they're pissed at the church. Like, they hate the church because they led to, you know, Lisa and everything dying. So, and they're all really just kind of glassy-eyed, like, very cult member, you know, robes and, like, weird beards and caps and stuff. Like, they seem super up to something from the moment you meet those guys.
Totally.
And you don't really know at first, like, if the judge guy, there's a lot of back and forth.
We'll get to the judge. He seems like a solid guy. and it goes some pretty cool places with that. I guess Saint Germain plays a huge role in this kind of uncovering what's going on in the Priory, because he goes there under the pretense that he wants to study their literature. And in doing so, he has this magical gem that seems to react. So he knows that something's down there. He suspects it's the Infinite Corridor. At a certain point, he makes his way down there and sees this huge fucking demon tied up,
night creature.
Yeah, like legs and arms tied up.
It's very Evangelion, like underneath this base having like this crazy like cosmic horror thing, you know, like very much that.
Right.
Which is just a pretty cool concept and everything. And actually, while watching that and seeing how cool I thought that night creature was, it made me think of, what was it, Adam? Was that the creature underneath in Evangelion? You know, the big, like, white...
Oh, yes. The secret... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that was just... It seemed so otherworldly and menacing.
That show is so strange.
It's really weird, but, like, very memorable.
Very memorable.
Yeah. We should podcast about it sometime. the scene... Like, they show a flashback of how the night creature got down there. Mm-hmm. And, oh, man, this is one of my favorite scenes of the whole season. It's really going hard on, like, the lights and the music and all that really just kind of haunting stuff. Because you just see it, like, jump in there, and it's just making all these, like, haunted house lights coming from inside, and the music's going crazy, and you don't know exactly what's going on inside there. But then when you see it after the fact, it's the worst church ever. It's just like there's poop in the corners, there's like a body on a crucifix upside down, everything's just like disheveled, there's like these weird cult guys everywhere.
It is the worst church.
Yeah, and then there's this like tied up ultra monster in the basement in a portal to hell. Like, it's just a bad place.
It's not where you want to be.
No. No. There are a lot of scenes, especially in the last couple episodes here, where I was just like, this is a bad time. This is that you don't want to be here.
No.
When, like, flames are erupting out of people's houses and all, like, going into this monster's stomach and the souls of people. Like, you can see their faces stretching out of his skin.
Yeah,
and
he's just becoming, taking on the souls of, consuming the souls of all of these people.
It's very Shang Tsung.
Yes. And what is happening in the process is that these other bonkers demons are coming through the portal.
Bad time.
It's just real bad. And meanwhile, Sypha, Trevor, and the judge's army of Lindenfell are fighting the Priory cult, I guess you would call it. So they have all that shit to deal with. They have these giant fucking pillars of flames that are going down into the basement. And so everyone's dying because the judge thought it would be wise to wait to advance their operation until everyone was home so they wouldn't get hurt. But the reality is that made things way worse because these houses were just being destroyed.
Yeah.
And they fight their way down. There's a lot of really fucking awesome fighting stuff going on.
Well, because all these things coming through the hell portal are like, a lot of them are like mini bosses and stuff from Castlevania, like these weird Cthulhu looking guys and everything. So it's just like everywhere you look, there's some cool fight or some cool creature. Mm-hmm. And Sypha's doing all sorts of really awesome
Sypha's
stuff.
Sypha's so cool.
She's great. The flame stuff. She
does
just the lightning.
She slices apart people with ice.
Yeah, she does the Bioshock water plasma thing.
I was
thing
thinking of that too.
The lightning, yeah. Man. That the cool. last couple episodes, like this, it's a nice slow burn that keeps getting cooler and cooler, and then by the end it all just explodes.
Totally,
in such an awesome.
Yeah,
way.
The climax for the season was just so amazing. At one point, when Trevor is fighting the big ultra demon who has all the souls, he has this one like whip that's on fire almost, and then his other like regular like chain whip, and just goes to town on this thing.
Dual wielding whips.
It's awesome.
It's so
just
good.
Slices it apart every way, but it like I feel like they said something to the effect of it has to die for every soul it has,
right? So he has to kill it like several times over.
Yeah But eventually it is bested.
Yes So they destroy all those creatures. There's no happy ending in this season. Like a billion people die.
So many people died.
I guess it's good that so Saint Germain does jump into the portal. Mm-hmm. So the portal's opening up and they're trying to resurrect Dracula. And you do see that cameo, like you see him holding Lisa in this like dilapidated house and he like looks at the camera basically. but he doesn't come out and Saint Germain dives in time to like get to like it's you don't know exactly what happens. You don't see the other side. Mm-hmm. That's something they could maybe touch on, or maybe it'd be cool to just leave that up to the imagination.
Right.
You know? But yeah, the portal closes. The monsters are bested. Isaac is still on the way to, like, I feel like there's a lot of like cool loose ends going forward.
Right.
You know, Hector with his army, or no, sorry, Isaac with his army. Carmilla and her sisters have Hector and his incoming army. Mm-hmm. Dracula is, like, established as being in hell, and you can resurrect him. Which, by the way, the 3D hell stuff I thought was super cool.
It was cool.
I could see how that could be almost cheesy, but they did it in a way where it wasn't. I thought it looked awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was really well done. After the events of the Priory, the main prior, Sala, the judge just, you know, he goes and stabs the judge. So the judge is pretty much about to die. And Sala says, oh, you can escape by going to this apple tree, which is earlier in the season. We see this young boy, like, who stole apples from a cart or something like that. And Sala, or the judge, hates kids running around his town.
Yeah.
So he yells at the kid, and he's like, if you want apples, here, go to this apple tree. That's my apple tree. You can take two. So the kid runs along. And then when Sala obviously escapes to the apple tree per the judge's instruction, and he falls into the spike pit.
Yeah.
This Mortal Kombat-esque spike pit. And when Trevor and Sypha arrive, they see, like, not only is Sala's body there, but these little bones that Sypha thinks belong to animals. And they go to burn down the judge's house at his request. And before they do so, they go into this locked room.
Which he had come out of earlier in the season, like washing his hands all creepy.
Yeah,
like.
And it was. I just love it because it's this really surprising twist. I mean, it doesn't really seem to serve the plot moving forward, but it's just such a nice, like, I don't know, Easter egg.
It's a subversion of your expectations.
Yeah, and it goes back to that thing that, you know, we talked about when we talked about Isaac, that, like, humanity in a lot of ways is unredeemable. I mean, like, there's this judge who we thought was, like, an honorable guy who cared about his town, who helped Sypha and Trevor and St. Germain, and yet he's also a serial killer killing young children.
Yeah.
And he, in this hidden room, he has like a shrine to them with all their shoes and stuff.
It's like some like True Detective season one stuff.
Yeah. And it's just like, I just love it because like, I can't really see that playing into the subsequent season at all. It just like exists just to kind of embellish the world and also, you know, kind of again, at just illustrate the depravity of humanity. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's really, really interesting. I love that twist.
Yeah, it was just very surprising. Like, when they revealed that at the very end, I was just like, oh, oh, geez, okay.
Yeah, like, when they first showed the pit, my mind immediately went back to like, oh, I remember him telling the kid to go there. And I was like, no, that can't be.
You mentioned that to me, yeah. And I said something like, oh, he must have like made the spike pit after that. but then it's like, oh, no, he's been doing this for a while. Yeah. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, this show goes in directions that you wouldn't expect it to. You know, because for a game that is just about going to Dracula and killing him over and over again, that definitely was part of the show, and it was a really cool part of the show, them storming the castle at the end of season two and killing Dracula. That was badass. But they've just gotten so much mileage on their own
right.
that wasn't just ripped from rinse and repeat Kill Dracula.
Yeah,
they've
developed all these characters so well, and they all have their own storylines, and I'm just really excited to see it all converge next season.
Yeah.
And see where that goes. I'm genuinely excited for the subsequent season. This show's fucking awesome.
I almost get feelings of like kind of like the scale of like a Game of Thrones or something. Mm-hmm. Obviously not the budget, and it's not, you know, this huge production that Game of Thrones is, but in terms of like the anticipation of like, oh man, Hector has this whole Isaac has this whole army, and he's marching here, but then they're building this army. But then what's going on? Oh, is somebody going to bring Dracula back? I feel like there are all these different threads in this big scope
right.
that I'm just super, super into.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, cannot recommend it enough. They're pretty quick to watch episodes. They're usually like 20, 25 minutes long. Mm-hmm. First season's like 4 episodes or something. Like
It's like 4 episodes, 8 episodes, and 10 episodes.
I thought that was it, but then I was looking on Wikipedia today and I thought I saw that season 2 was 12.
I could
be wrong, though. But regardless, it is worth your time, even if you don't give a shit about the games at all. Like, Monk, you weren't like a big Castlevania fan, and I am, and I feel like it hits us both exactly the same.
Totally.
So, just giant thumbs up. Way to go, everyone involved with the making of that show.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Badass. But that'll be it for our discussion about Castlevania Season 3. Obviously, when and if a Season 4 comes along, we will certainly be covering that.
Most definitely.
Yes, but we want to thank all you out there listening. We want to give an extra special thanks to our patrons on Patreon.
Oh, thank you, patrons.
Thank you so much. I saw some new ones come in the last week or so, and thank you. Welcome.
The heartiest of welcomes.
Yes, the heartiest of welcomes. And we welcome you with the things we do every month. We do, you get an ad-free version of Painting the Stream each and every week. Every month? We do every week.
We do an episode every week.
Yes, we've done it every week from the very beginning. you'll get an ad-free version every week. You will get the episodes a day early. You'll get them on Saturday instead of Sunday. You'll have access to our Patreon page. You can come in there, you can comment and chat with us. And also, you are going to get your own Bonku specifically written for you from Bonk.
That's me. And that's right. That's exactly what you get. You get a Bonku for you by becoming a patron. And this week we are celebrating a young man.
Yeah.
I like to call Samir.
Okay.
So Samir, if you're listening to this, thank you so much.
Thanks, Samir.
You're just the tops. And here's your Bonku. The experiment was a ravaging success. Samir, meet Samir.
Oh man, that's a fun one.
So he
Did
got
he clone
cloned,
himself?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's
cool. He was cloned, and now there's two of them.
Well, I hope it was a success.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you would never know that he was cloned until you saw them standing next to each other.
Right, right. Well, I hope Samir is not too taken back by seeing himself in the flesh, but maybe he'll be friendly.
I forgot what I was listening to earlier that talked about meeting, how much it would suck if you meet your clone and like you just hate it, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's me though.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
Yeah, that would suck.
We'll see if we run into that.
I hope not. I really don't want to meet myself. I don't even like seeing myself in pictures, let alone
like live with one.
I wouldn't like that.
I'd have to get rid of my game room and just give it to your clone.
Just be like, come on, Bianca, put on some mascara or something.
So we want to thank everyone again. You can follow us at Pan the Stream if you want to find out what we're watching. You can, what do? You do the Twitter, you got the email. You can email us feedback, suggestions, anything at panningthestream@gmail.com. If you feel so inclined, if you want to go to the old Apple Podcast, give us the old 5-star and let folks know that you enjoy the show. That helps us quite a bit.
Ooh, that'd be great.
So thanks so much, everyone. And regardless, patron or no, or podcast or Twitter follower or whatever, doesn't matter. If you're listening to our voice right now, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And, you know, this is with the all the stuff going on with the coronavirus, it's the perfect opportunity to catch up on a lot of shows you've been putting off watching. And maybe if you want to go back in the catalog of Panning the Stream, some episodes that might have piqued your interest but you didn't want to listen to because you didn't want spoilers, it'd be a good time to catch up on a lot of really good stuff because it's never been a better time to be a fan of media and entertainment and, you know, never been a better time to have to be home because there's so much to do at home.
Yeah,
so.
If something you know, on this scale was ever going to happen, you know, we're in a good place technologically for like streaming and like, you know, hey, we'll get to get Animal Crossing this weekend because we can download it. We don't have to go to a GameStop or something. Yeah. So we hope you're enjoying everything you're watching and playing and staying safe.
Wash your hands.
Yep. Yep. Just be safe out there. Stuff. Don't get sick. But yeah, go back. You got over 100 episodes you can listen to at Panning the Stream if you feel so inclined. We hope you enjoy it. And we hope you will join us next week. By the way, thanks, Tom Monda, for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
And we hope to see you all next week on Painting the Stream.
Bye.